Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. For all the talk about the U.S. and Israel contemplating a military strike against Iran, Iran may have bigger problems right at home. It's a currency crisis causing a spike in the price of food and other goods and the outbreak of big protests as a result. With us to discuss what this means for Iranians and for Iran's controversial place in the world is Borsu Daragahi, Middle East and North Africa correspondent for the Financial Times, and Thomas Erdbrink, the Tehran bureau chief at the New York Times. Thanks to you both. And we have a bit of a delay, I think, because both of you are joining us from Iran. But Thomas, let's start with you. How bad is this currency crisis, and how are most Iranians feeling about it?
Well, just imagine that the dollar would lose 40% in value to the euro in 1 week time. I guess there would be, you know, panic on Fifth Avenue. And that's what's happening here in Tehran as well. People see their savings vaporize. They are concerned over the future. And even the people who don't need foreign exchange, they are faced with higher prices. They have to pay more for a pack of milk, have to pay more for an airline ticket, and have to pay more for anything in between. So panic is high. People are very worried. And, of course, it adds to their worries for the future because they see no solution for all the problems that are facing them.
Tell us, how big are the protests, and when do they begin?
I don't think I don't think the protests were that big. In 2009, you might remember, Iranians by the millions came out to protest against President Ahmadinejad's election victory. And they were out for months on end. And the protests that we saw 2 days ago were much, much smaller in size and possibly even also organized by certain people in the bazaar. But it was a very significant sign that the level of discontent is very high, because I don't think that many people have the guts actually to go out here and protest. So the fact that something happened is a big sign. And it's also a warning to Iran's leaders that they have to solve these problems for the people. Otherwise, they could be facing more protests.
Borsu Daragahi of the Financial Times. Is this what the sanctions against Iran were meant to do, create this kind of instability domestically? Borsu, are you there?
I heard that question correct. I didn't hear that question.
The question I was asking was whether this was what the American-led sanctions against Iran were meant to do, create this kind of instability in the currency and in the situation domestically in Iran.
That's a really good question. When the sanctions policy was first sharpened by first the Bush administration and then the Obama administration, not to mention under the Clinton administration as well, the intention avowedly was to hurt the regime without affecting ordinary people. But eventually, as frustration over Iran's nuclear program mounted in Western capitals, there seems to be a much more of a shotgun approach. And a real determination on the part of Western powers to really damage Iran's economy, whether ordinary people are affected or not. There are even some people who say that if you create enough discontent among ordinary people about the general state of the economy, that could inspire them to go into the streets and overthrow the regime, which has been a thorn in the side of the West for a long time.
What do you think? Could that happen?
History has shown that does not happen in other countries. But, you know, Iran is in a very unique situation. I think the regime is extremely corrupt at this point. I think there is a lot of discontent. I think the regime thinks that the sanctions will unify the people, that if you hurt the whole economy, if you hurt the whole country, people will unify behind the regime and rally around them. But this may be wishful thinking. However, in the past, Very seldom, if you look at countries like Cuba or Iraq, have people who are hurting under sanctions turn around and overthrow their regime.
Thomas Erdbrink of the New York Times, do you agree with that? Do you think that this may destroy the middle class, as you sort of tragically reported on today, but not change the regime?
I think that is, as Borzu says, that is definitely also a possibility. Several rounds of sanctions to other countries in the past have not always achieved what they were aimed for. Now, this middle class in Iran has grown very used to avoiding the problem. They are not the supporters of Iran's leaders, even though they are large in numbers and they stand for a more modern Iran with more freedoms. But they don't like to pay high cost in order to have changes in this country. So you can almost think that these people are trying to cope. They're trying to continue to live the lives they were having, even though, as I said, you know, everything is getting more expensive and the pressure is rising. And for now, I don't see them actually gathering on the streets and overthrowing their leaders. Now, that said, there is always a possibility that something happens because their discontent is very high. I've never seen it this high. People are incredibly dissatisfied.
The Jerusalem Post reported today that the protesters are calling President Ahmadinejad a traitor, but they're not criticizing the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. Why the difference? Thomas, can you answer that?
I think that yes. Yeah, I can try and answer it. Sorry, I couldn't hear you, so I didn't know if you were addressing me or Mr. Daragahi. The Supreme Leader is not an elected official. He's not someone that can be changed in elections, but President Ahmadinejad is. So President Ahmadinejad also has made major changes in Iran's economy. He has canceled state subsidies. He has he's been handing out money to the poor. So it's logical for the middle class to address him first. But, of course, everybody knows in this country the end responsibility is always on the shoulders of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
Andrea Bernstein in this morning for Brian Lehrer. My guests are Thomas Erdbrink, the New York Times Tehran bureau chief, and Borzu Daragahi, the Middle East and North Africa correspondent for the Financial Times. They are both in Tehran today, which is why they sound a little far off. Borzu, some people that I know that have been into Iran and have done reporting in Tehran have spoken to me about how the populace there is a lot more feisty than most Americans might think. And this obviously is, you know, generating a great cause for discontent. Can you comment on that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that one more time, quickly?
Yes. I just was saying that people that I know that have reported in Tehran have talked about how the populace is a lot more feisty than many Americans might think. And I'm wondering how this crisis is filtering through or sort of meeting that where the sort of public temperature is.
You know, I'm not in Iran right now. I'm in Egypt. And perhaps Thomas would be better to sort of
talk about the
public temperature.
Thomas, can you talk about that?
Oh, I don't know about the word feisty. I mean, how do you mean? I mean, in which way they're feisty? If you'd say they're more rebellious, or the Iranian middle class is the most forward-thinking modern middle class of all countries in the Middle East, I would say yes, I totally agree with you. I think I'm in an art gallery right now. It's not even a real art gallery. It's like a pop-up art gallery. And there's hundreds of young people here who have gathered to make to watch these exhibitions that didn't get the approval of Iran's Ministry of Islamic Guidance and Culture. I drove here in a friend who owns a Porsche. I drove over. I came here in a three-lane highway. Street lights are working. Of course, for the average American, this is a country where people with beards pump their fists in the air while they shout death to America. But Iran has changed. This is a modern nation and probably the most modern nation in the region.
So what does this crisis of the real mean then for all of that?
Well, it means for all those people that they can't develop themselves the way that maybe people in the West would like them to develop. Take the rise of the internet. Well, it requires to go on the internet. You need computers. all these young kids that are here right now, they're scraping their money together to buy, just like all the other teenagers in other countries, to buy a new Apple computer. Well, they can't afford that anymore because it became three times more expensive. Now, I don't want to say that in Iran everybody's rich or in Iran everybody wants to buy Apple computers, because there is a, this is a country of 75 million and a lot of people are poor, but the people in the capital, they set the cultural agenda. They are the people, the rest of the country, in a way, is looking towards to become. People want to be a member of the middle class, and now these U.S. sanctions, plus the government mismanagement, is wiping out this middle class. So this is a problem for people. They feel caught in the middle, and they feel as if both the American government and the Iranian government are working against them.
Borzu Daragahi of the Financial Times. Wall Street Journal has an article that is headlined, "The West Seizes on Iran's Currency Woes." It says the U.S. and Europe are working on new coordinated measures intended to accelerate the plunge in Iran's currency and drain its foreign exchange reserves, according to officials from the Obama administration. It sure sounds like the U.S. is trying to make the crisis deepen.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they definitely are trying to make it deeper. I think one thing that's really interesting, just sort of following on what Tomas was saying. Tomas is a brilliant analyst on Iran. But you have a situation in Iran where for the past 25 years or so, there's been somewhat of a social contract where, you know, the clerics and the clerical regime monopolizes political power, and in return, the middle class is allowed to somewhat rise and better itself, you know, through private schools and private institutions, through...
And
all of a sudden now, you have this social contract that's been broken because of this currency crisis, because of the economic crisis, and all of a sudden the rules of the game have changed a little bit in Iran, and I think that maybe the Obama administration sort of understands that Iran is a little different than Iraq in the 1990s, whereas you have this volatile, very assertive middle class that you know, if you break the contract between the regime and the middle class, you could create some kind of political volatility as well.
Thomas Erdbrink, where do we go from here?
Well, if the Wall Street Journal report of today is correct, and the EU and the United States are intensifying sanctions, it will just mean for normal people that their life will become a lot more difficult. And but yes, also they are increasingly worried for the future, because exactly what Mr. Daragahi says, this social contract, this kind of unspoken contract that existed between Iran's leaders and the middle class, is off the table because of the sanctions. And of course, this could lead to anger and uprising. But for now, I see people trying to cope and avoid the problem.
We heard President Ahmadinejad this week blame, quote, money changers for part of this. Now, is he talking about Jews? And is there any sense inside Iran that people are going to be blaming, Israel?
He's blaming people in the bazaar who are speculators, just scapegoating people. And this is a populist game that he's played a lot. More than anything, he's probably implicitly blaming his arch rival, Rafsanjani, who is regarded as a very wealthy merchant himself. And you know, sort of blaming his political enemies by identifying 22 so-called money changers. I don't think there's an ethnic or religious component to that.
Is there any sense inside Iran that they're blaming outsiders for their problems?
Well, I think Iranians are very used to their leaders blaming other people for problems they have caused themselves, in a way. But of course, when it comes down to the sanctions, it's very easy to blame others, because the sanctions are being imposed by the U.S. and the EU.
All right, I think we're going to leave it there, but thank you so much to both of you. Fascinating discussion. Borzu Daragahi, the Middle East and North Africa correspondent for the Financial Times, and Thomas Erdbrink, the Tehran bureau chief of the New York Times. Thanks to you both. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer, and we're going to travel far, far away to the stars when we come back.